top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
You will die, only to live again in a younger body. Then you can tell me if the operation was a success. I could easily kill you now, but I'm determined to have your brain.
You're listening to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of genre cinema. Hi, my name is Chris, and along with Jeff, we talk about movies that aren't really awful at all. Horror, action, kung fu, musicals, post-apocalyptic, women in prison films, and much, much more.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 321 of the Really Awful Movies Podcast. Nobody sleeps in the woods tonight. Terrible title. Is that a declaration? Is that an admonition? Like, nobody sleeps in the woods tonight, and you throw in a finger wag. I don't know, but the title actually conjures up Don't Go in the Woods, that eminently forgettable 1980s golden era slasher known for little else other than the reworking of the Teddy Bear's Picnic song, Don't Go Out in the Woods Today, You'll Meet with a Big Surprise. I don't remember much about that one, but it was corny AF, as the kids say. Corny is you know, fudge. Now, Netflix's Nobody Sleeps in the Woods Tonight is billed as the first, possibly, Polish slasher film, and I don't know to the extent that that's true, but I can safely say that it's the first Polish slasher film, or horror film of any type, that I've had the pleasure of seeing, and I've talked at lengths in previous episodes of the podcast, where the horror genre is so expansive, and it's frequently much more interesting when you view an effort that takes place in another country that's a little bit beyond, or not beyond, but let's say slightly outside of your realm of understanding. And I think this one fits the bill here. It's quite polarizing, and some people are really taking to it, but others are knocking it down several pegs. And I think it's a little bit unfair, and I'll probably try and elucidate why or how right now. For the last decade, I think, in the horror space, it's been something of a bugbear to deal with technology, and specifically how you're within a quick call and satellite in space in the near atmosphere to Earth of getting first responders help, and you can pretty much negate any kind of setup with a quick call to police. And I'm thinking of the reboot of Halloween from 2018, where if one of the characters hadn't dropped his cell phone into, I forget what it was, a plate of food or something that damaging it, then it could have been an easy call to the authorities to be able to be dispatched and maybe take care of Michael Myers and a lot quicker than they ordinarily would have before he got out to the Strode compound. Terrible film, but just one example off the top of my head of ways that movies have dealt with cell phones. I think Most Likely to Die featured a phone being stepped on, or there's always some schism in the mechanism or some sort of means of getting rid of technology that puts you in immediate touch with the authorities to be able to get help. Brilliantly, I think, with Nobody Sleeps in the Woods Tonight, this is a summer camp that is specifically devoted to people who have mobile phone or social media addictions. And so right at the get-go, you have a kind of a gauntlet that the camp attendees have to go through, in which they give their last name and they're checked off by a bunch of camp counselors that are fairly interchangeable, a la Friday the 13th. But they give their name and they hand over their devices, much to their chagrin. And there's a lot of people at this camp. I think it's called Adrenalina, which is probably Camp Adrenaline in Polish. And these poor souls have to go not only days or perhaps weeks without the devices, but are also put through their paces through a kind of boot camp workout, and they're subdivided according to number. So they get, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and they're divided into different groups. So it starts out with a large group of people that's whittled down to, I think, a half dozen or so. And that was something where I wasn't sure where this was going, because in a typical summer camp setup, you have the the standard, let's say Camp Crystal Lake for the most obvious example, where you have a new summer and everyone needs to go make some money for before school resumes, and a bunch of camp counselors get in a van and they go to get their, you know, get assigned their detail and their duty, and they get their orientation at the camp, and it's usually about a dozen or so poor souls who are about to get variously eviscerated or gutted or throttled or garroted or garroted. Is that the garroted artery? I don't know. In any case, they're basically bait for Jason Voorhees as he plows through the latest group of counselors. Whereas this one, I mean, you have a potentially, if not 100, if not more than that, and you're wondering at the outset, this alone makes it unique in terms of campground summer camp horrors. But they do, I guess, subdivide them into their constituent parts in whom they can invest, get the audience to invest more strongly. And it's a pretty fun group because the much like a social experiment, you have really people gravitating towards their own kind. And this means, I think, Daniel and Aniela, the two really good-looking people in the group, sort of become an item, and then the Ulek and his Zosia connect over their mutual love of the Terminator. And great, but Ulek is a fatty and could have easily been dispatched to fat camp had that been a thing, or is that still a thing in Poland? I'm not sure, but he's a YouTube star, one of these gamer types who inexplicably has, you know, nearly a million subs who follow his every move. I forget what game he's a master at. I'm not much of a gamer, but it beggars belief to me that someone can, it's so meta, I can't even tell you. Someone playing a video game and then other people watching someone do that, it's just so inane to me. But again, I'm probably not the demographic that would to whom this would really represent some cultural touchstone. But I think it's interesting that in that this is a film that's really, really current. I believe it was a 2020 release, but that they really get this right and they get their influences right and they're really up to date on their social media mix. And there's a bit of discussion on Instagram and who is doing what, when, and why it's important that you should be your exploits, plucking coffee beans from the plantation in fucking Peru should be of interest to people, the bulk of whom you really don't know. And such is the dilemma of these social platforms that encourage this kind of distant lack of familiarity and relationships to sprout up. But I guess that's what the summer camp is meant to really address. And so, neat conceit right off the bat that this is what the camp is for. Now, I think they're all designated number four, all these people who get together and they find themselves in the company of a woman who's this kind of butchy, hyper masculine, tough as nails, outdoors woman who is their leader and I guess their camp counselor, who leads them out into the bush for a 3-day camping retreat. So it's funny, not only are these people pushed to their limits, I would think, if they're not natural campers, by having to sleep in large tents or possibly cabins. I'm not sure how built up this camp is, but they actually have to make side trips and far away from any latrines or anything. So, I mean, personal story here, I once did a portage canoe trip out in Ontario's north, so about 7 hours north of, 6 or 7 hours north of Toronto, in a provincial park called Killarney, and you're miles and miles and miles from anybody, and there's this lake after lake all connected with rivers, and you go in by bus through this almost, I think it actually probably was a logging road. So you're driving down this road and you have the branches hitting the side of the bus and you're like, where in the fuck am I? This is right out of Deliverance and actually right out of Nobody Sleeps in the Woods Tonight as well, because there's an opening shot that's an overhead view of this rather off the beaten path locale in Poland. And so this is Western Europe, of course, and not to be Poles, I don't think, take kindly to be called Eastern Europe, nor is it geographically accurate, because, you know, it is actually still part of Western Europe. But I think there are parts of Poland where it gets far more remote and rugged than you would ever see in, let's say, Germany, which is so populated that I don't really think they have much in the way of areas in which you can really, really legitimately get lost like you can in Canada or the US. But the overhead shot of this locale is really effective, and you see this, what looks to be a logging road, and you see this group of campers going in there and really getting lost in the woods almost before they actually do get lost. So I think that's a really, really cool way of going about it. But again, with drone technology in that, my God, it seems like every Netflix show, regardless of the genre, has this sweeping overhead shot. And I guess until the technology becomes passe or old hat, we're going to continue to see that for the next year or two. And frankly, I can't see any objection with that because it's really beautiful. Now, as I said, Zosia and Ulek pair up over their nerdiness, and she's a bit of a tomboyish, reticent, fairly quiet, keeps her own type, and naturally she would connect with a YouTube gamer type who's kind of a fatso, and that's Ulek, and they bond, and he has this thorough understanding of the horror movie milieu and the space and the boundaries and the limitations in which it operates, and how that if a common trope obviously is splitting up and deciding whether to stick together or to split up, and whether you're better off. I always think you're better off splitting up because the killer really can't get to all of you unless there's some supernatural element involved a la Michael Myers or Jason Voorhees. But really, I don't know why, especially in the Lost in the Woods horror subgenre, whether it's Wrong Turn or Don't Go in the Woods or one of these type films, you can just stay put until daylight and just you will not be found, considering that there are only so many paths through the woods. But you can just stay put, provided you're able to, and then in daylight you can go elsewhere. This is a pretty, you know, as I said, at the this is a pretty good use of woods. I'm thinking of the movie The Ritual as well, where a bunch of British mates go out to the Scandinavian woods for a male bonding experience. That makes really good of the woods as well. There's the tree stand here is really cool and creepy, and it's just all a bunch of tall pines, and there's a lot of monoculture of in terms of the flora, and that really adds to the visual appeal of this film, and you do get the sense that they're off the beaten path. Anyway, this Ulek character is well versed in and has a solid understanding of what happens when in terms of horror and references different films, and that's kind of a fun little touch. How the group connects is really great too, because you have Daniel and Aniela, I believe their names are, and they're obviously two very good-looking people, and Daniel, there's lots of sport made about whether he shaves his legs a la competitive swimmer, a la Michael Phelps, or one of these competitive cyclists, that he's extremely buff and ripped, and yet he's not much of a ladies' man, as Aniela soon finds out. And there's a pretty interesting scene right off the bat where she propositions him with a condom in his face. I'm thinking this is like probably pretty transgressive for maybe a more Catholic country like Poland, that's maybe not as loose and freewheeling as the likes of maybe neighboring Germany or potentially Holland. There's a lot of Catholicism running through it, and it seems to have still a heavy hand operating in the country. And there's references as well to one of the characters who is actually queer, and how his father, he says that his father would rather him be a kind of a right-wing zealot than because he's unable to come to terms with his son's sexuality. And he says that he basically lives in denial with his son when he brings over friends, that he just basically treats them as platonic friends rather than lovers. So there's lots of stuff, and I'm not overly familiar with the modern day culture of Poland to be able to comment more broadly on whether this is the case, but I suspect that it's much like maybe France or maybe Quebec in the 70s. There's an overhang or hangover of good old Catholic guilt that still imbues the country's sensibilities. But I'd be curious to hear any of our listeners and what their experiences are with this film, if they happen to have if they have Polish extraction or better knowledge of it. Now, again, she propositions Daniel, and he's a virgin, and she gives him the experience of his lifetime. He doesn't get a chance to experience much more in terms of you know, the horizontal boogie, the horizontal shuffle, as he's given a solid beating that conjures up one of the Friday the 13th films. And it's actually a direct reference to one of the kills in that film, and I think it made its way into our book, but I can't recall. But he's hoisted in his sleeping bag and slammed against a tree. So that's a direct homage, if you want to call it, ripoff, if you want to call it, to one of the, it might be Friday 13th 4 or 5. My memory escapes me, but there's definitely a victim who meets their maker by getting hauled around and swung around, and the centripetal force of being hurled repeatedly into a tree while they're in a sleeping bag. Done. The antagonist in Nobody Sleeps in the Woods Tonight has a kind of supernatural genesis, which is really weird. It's almost more akin to The Thing or Alien or one of the Italian ripoffs than what you'd expect from a camp counselor type slasher, which is really a little bit bizarre. I mean, a piece of, like, a meteorite falls to Earth, and then it explodes and envelops the form of two boys when they're out at a cabin in the woods, and they are, I guess, poisoned by this thing, and they grow into this. This is almost like 60s comic book world here, but they grow into these grotesque figures with boils and protruding like thick arms and bellies, and you have this antagonist, two antagonists actually, who are really corpulent and really with giant beer guts, but covered completely head to toe in these gross, sickening, almost like plague, like bubonic plague bubons or boils, and it's quite repulsive. Although it should be said that despite this, that the actual kills are fairly pedestrian, and there's not much in the way of the kind of gut muncher intense gore that you're likely to see in a, let's say, a French New Wave film, or maybe or the discomfort, I should say, or maybe the golden era of the Italian gut muncher. So there's some eye gouging scenes, but some of the deaths are some cutaways and I'm not sure to what extent people find the perp particularly engaging or compelling, but I thought it was pretty hilarious that what would typically be on these shores a hicksploitation type in-group out-group dynamic between off the beaten path group of people like the Sawyers in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, but in the context of Poland is actually a group of backwoods, deviant, derelict types that are actually spawned by something otherworldly and from outer space. I don't know whether they don't have... there is a reference Ulich makes to B-class Poland, and maybe the, the parts of the country that were not as fulsomely developed post-communism. But I'm not sure to what extent Ulek's reference to B-class Poland informs, like, the kind of thing that you'd typically see with in the American horror space of the bootlegger, inbred hillbilly types in the mountains of let's say West Virginia or Georgia in the case of Deliverance. I don't know to what extent backwoods types exist in Poland, but I thought it was. The antagonists are fun. I mean, this is a fun movie. It's nothing serious. It doesn't deviate too much from horror movie convention. It invests a lot in its characters, which I like. They're not reinventing the wheel here, but in order to develop a car, I'm sorry, I'm beating this metaphor to death, you need to get your whistle wet and develop your wheel, and then you can develop your Tesla or God knows what, your Prius vehicle, but maybe Poland will be the next hotspot for horror, as when the North American horror scene starts to wane, there are other countries that tend to pick up the slack, and that's usually, well, it has been France, but it's usually South Korea and Japan. So we'll see what happens, and I don't know how Poles are responding to this movie, but it'll be interesting to find out. Now I'm gonna switch to what I've learned. So, Nobody Sleeps in the Woods Tonight. The importance of character investment cannot be understated. These people are really, really fun, and they're great. Daniela has a concern that she's more to the blonde bimbo than people perceive. So director and writer Bartoszka Kowalski invests quite a bit in her. She's actually quite sympathetic that insofar as what would typically be a trope in the Western North American style horror would be that she would be just sort of a dispensable bimbo. But she has quite a nice heart-to-heart with Daniel Chaka about how the misperceptions about her and that there's more to her than meets the eye, despite obviously she's a bombshell, a classic blonde Polish looker. But I thought it was very sweet, as was her dalliance, her tryst with the virginal, very buff Daniel. I thought it was very interestingly handled. They puff the MJ first, and they're sitting in a beach setting, or sand setting actually, by a rather pristine body of water that looks very pretty. And it's the type of thing that you could probably see coming, because Daniel's kind of leering at her and checking out her butt and everything, but it veers away from that kind of territory and ends up actually being very sweet, as is the relationship. Very, very deeply moving, I thought, relationship between Zosia and Ulek. I thought the two outcasts and the two nerds really come together in a way that is actually very sweet. And they find, when they find themselves in severe danger at the hands of this grotesque creature, then how they work together to survive is, you know, with no spoilers here, but it's really well done and actually quite quite inspiring to a certain extent. So yes, this is not a film that's really going to have tons of staying power, but I like the fact that this is a different part of the world once again that is being given a bunch of exposure through what is a pretty standard, pretty rote slasher setup. Even the poster, you have one of the characters has an axe, there's a cabin, there's a bunch of characters, there's a counselor. I mean, this is probably made with a broader North American audience in mind, although what I've read so far is there are a few allusions to modern day Poland, and so there are a few touch points that will resonate, and there, especially there's again the heavy weight of the Catholic Church features prominently. Now I'm not sure what else I would have learned there, but again, the excellent use of a thick tree canopy, and but also, you know, there's the buzzing flies, which has become such a, I guess, cliche of the exploitation genre. That's getting a little old, as is the bones. And, oh, what are these people up to? Are they gnawing on animal bones? Are they human? And that kind of their use in the mise-en-scene for a typically grotesque cabin, that is a little bit old, but again, you can't really fault this one. This is pretty much leave your brain in neutral and just enjoy the ride. It's just a fun, harmless time waster, for a lack of a better term. I'm going to give this 2 3/4, maybe up to a 3. I'd be interested to hear what our listeners think. We'll definitely be checking out more horrors from around the world, because it's really great to see how different what really appeals to and what frightens different people around the globe. So it's a global world, right? A global village. And Marshall McLuhan may have intended something more negative when he coined that phrase, but I'm going to put it in a positive spin on it and say that we're more connected now than ever. This is the best time really to be alive. There's less violence than there ever has been in human history. And provided we all don't immediately succumb to COVID, I think it's a great place to be right now. And anyway, we shall talk to you soon, and take care. Thank you.